Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The University of Tulsa Theater Department kicks off its new season with a classic by Tennessee Williams, his first great success and possibly the playwright's greatest, The Glass Menagerie. The story of the Wingfield family, matriarch Amanda raises two children alone, a southern faded glory who is at the same time monstrous and sympathetic. Son Tom, now the provider of the family, who aspires to be a poet and leave his family and burdens behind. Gentle, fragile Laura, who lives a life in imagination more than in reality. And Jim O'Connor, the gentleman caller who swept into the Wingfield maelstrom. The play is thought to be very much an autobiographical work of Williams' own tumultuous life. My guests today are TU professor Stephen Marzoft, who's directing the play, and Michelle Miller-Dill, who will step onto stage to portray Amanda Wingfield in the production that will run this Thursday through Sunday, this week, and next at the Kendall Hall Chapman Theater on the University of Tulsa campus. Stephen Marzoft and Michelle Miller-Dill are my guests today on Studio Tulsa. Stephen Marzoft, Michelle Miller-Dill, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So when you were deciding the season, The Glass Menagerie, it's a great play. And it's really interesting, since it first came out in 44, 45, it pops up about every 10 years in New York as a major production. But in the last decade, there's been four different productions of The Glass Menagerie. Is there something about The Glass Menagerie that's speaking to us today in a different way?
Well, I think that one of the main draws is it's about a family, and it's about typical American family, and nobody, when you're in high school and you have to read this play, you would say, that's not a typical American family, but it is a typical American family who are dealing with Amanda's been deserted by her husband. She's had to raise these children by herself. Tom is now responsible. Her son is now responsible for taking care of the family economically.
And Tom wants no part of it.
And Laura is sort of a homebound young woman who has no place out in society. So Amanda doesn't quite know what to do. When I was in college, I played Laura. Now, just, 5 years later, no, shut up. A few years later, I'm playing Amanda. And when I played Laura, I thought Amanda was awful. And now I think these children are awful.
Well, Stephen, from your viewpoint, why do this particular play this year with your students?
I've always been attracted to this particular play because it takes place in the Depression, which adds a wonderful, desperate quality to the characters and to the relationships. And to piggyback off from Michelle, this is a play about a family that, and what I've been saying to the cast and to the design team is, what keeps them together is double the amount that tries to pull them apart. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. We have a lot of fractured relationships sometimes with our families, but there is a driving force that keeps us together. So that was my attraction to doing this.
Do you think that's why it's so popular now? It's like there's so many forces trying to pull families apart. There are so many broken families anyway. And what does keep a family together? Even though in The Glass Menagerie, it's kind of, you're kind of left ambivalent whether they're going to stay together. And in fact, if this is Tennessee Williams' most autobiographical play, most people believe it is really quite close to his own family, then yes, they kind of stay together, but not together in their own way. Kind of like a take on the old Tolstoy line, unhappy families finding their own unique way.
It's funny because, I've used a lot of personal references during this, and I think Tennessee would understand. I have a nice relationship with my family, but I don't see them very often. And there are things that have happened throughout my life that, have pulled me away from them. But there is that four-letter word, L-O-V-E, that keeps me connected to them. Now, I'm not to the point where Tom is in this play. I mean, he has the weight of the world on his shoulders in his mind. But I think the relatability to the love that you have for a sibling, a parent, I think that's why this play is done so often. It really hits you right here in the heart and sometimes in the gut. which is a great piece of art then.
I'm interested, Amanda is this great character. You know, she's over the top. But when you look at her circumstances, I think when you read synopsis of the play, even though her husband is not in the play, he is in the play.
Oh, he is a major character mm-hmm. in the
and
play.
And never in the play.
Correct. And you say that Amanda's over the top, and she is, but I was raised in the South and raised by very strong, steel magnolia Southern women. You know, compared to my grandmother and my mother, Amanda's pretty normal. there's a saying in the South is that we don't hide our crazy people away. We put them on the front porch with a glass of tea and display them because we call them eccentric. And Amanda has some of those qualities, and I have some of those qualities, much to my dismay. Stephen has used a lot of personal references, and I've used a lot of personal references, and we looked at each other one day, and I went, I am Amanda, and he very kindly didn't comment on that. But I have a 14-year-old son, and he is the best kid in the world, but one day I found myself, we were having a discussion, that's in air quotes, discussion, and I looked at Bo, and I said, you're joking. I know that's not what you were talking about. And I just went right into Amanda and said some of her lines and realized you just delivered some lines from Glass Menagerie to your 14-year-old son in an argument that you were having. There's something to that.
Well, I'm interested, since you've played Laura, you're playing Amanda, how are you relating this to your students? Are you trying to, as a faculty member doing a role in this production, are you trying to relate your process to the students for a day when, you know, a female student will be playing Amanda, even though you're playing it in this particular production?
Well, I'm going to take a moment and brag on our students. There are lots of teaching moments in this show, but I'm learning from those teaching moments just the same as the students are. I think perhaps one thing that I can bring to it is I hyper-research everything, and I really think about things and come in, and I had a stack of pictures and research and all of this stuff, and everybody did research, but I don't know that any of them were behind my curve in any way whatsoever. Mm. So the main thing that I would tell Kate Rudd, we were downstairs doing our hair yesterday, and I said, you know, one day you're going to play this role. And she said, I was afraid to play Laura. And I said, why? You're wonderful. She is. She's truly, mm-hmm. truly wonderful in that role. I do believe that we all equally feel the weight of history on our shoulders. Cherry Jones played this role. Joanne Woodward played this role.
Katharine Hepburn
played this role, all the way back to Laurette Taylor back in the day, the original cast that opened on Broadway. So there is a weight of history from these roles on my shoulders that I'm trying to play homage to, but it's still, this is my Amanda.
You know, Stephen, I'll just ask you how you set this piece up, because I've read many accounts where they talk about it being a very cinematic play, and yet when you see a film of this, it doesn't have the power of a stage production. So how can it be cinematic and yet at the same time look better live than it can on film?
You know, Tennessee has the foreword that he talks about. He talks about the plastic theater, which is this uber sort of theatrical style that he had, which plays into my taste. Tartuffe last year had a lot of elements of that, you know, people breaking convention, turning to a screen and pointing at it, and it shifts to a different picture or a different television program or something like that. And Tennessee talks about that in the foreword, that as much as the relationships and the characterizations are 100% authentic and real, the world that they're in is not. And especially in this play, it's a memory play. So there are a lot of elements that are very stylized in our production. And I think the trap is to try to make it uber realistic. And it takes away from the memory quality to it, because memory is selective. It's not 100% real. So, for instance, in our production, Tom has a coat that he wears. Amanda mimes a coat on and off. We have wine glasses and a decanter, but no plates and silverware. So they're miming eating. And it makes it uber, uber theatrical then. And I think counterintuitively actually draws you in more than it pulls you out, because that's sort of – that was his eye in creating this play. And we have totally embraced that.
How important is that opening monologue where Tom, I'm paraphrasing now, he says, you know, a magician, where this is the opposite of a magician. A magician tries to – gives you an illusion and tries to make it seem like the truth. In this piece, truth
– I bring you truth in the pleasant disguise of illusion.
Yeah. Yes.
That's Tennessee right there. I mean, that is him coming through. And that monologue sets up the rest of the play. And the way that, we are doing this is literally as he is talking and moving is when life is reanimating into this world. It's as if when I was talking to Susan Barrett, who was the scenic designer, we kept on talking and I said, you know, it's like there's this memory that Tom cannot get out of his head. And he tries so hard to not go back into it and to revisit it, but he can't help himself. And as he does that is when the world reanimates. So the representation we have on stage, scenically and with the lights and projections, I think really ties that all together.
And it's sort of like a dormant memory that comes to
life.
That's
exactly right.
As
he's speaking and moving, it starts to reanimate.
And yeah. Tennessee was a genius. That particular monologue you're talking about where he says, I give you – say the line again, Stephen.
I give you truth in the pleasant disguise of illusion.
It's brought back at the end of the play because Amanda says, you live in a dream, you manufacture illusion. And she yells this at him. Well, his memory of that argument is what starts the whole play.
Yep.
It's a powerful piece. It will be performed by the University of Tulsa Theater Thursday through Sunday,
yes.
And then again next week as well at the University of Tulsa's Kendall Hall's Chapman Theater. University of Tulsa Theater presenting Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie. Michelle Miller-Dill stepping from behind the scenes to play Amanda Wingfield, the southern matriarch of the Wingfield family. Stephen Marzoff directing the piece, and they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Well, Michelle, let me talk about preparing for Amanda. You said you had a stack of research. What sort of things do you research? Is it are you doing this as a period piece? I mean, I almost have to do it as a period piece, don't you?
Well, first of all, let me just say I've probably driven poor Stephen absolutely nuts because I'll find something and go, did you know? Did you know? Look at this. And he very graciously has made himself available to all of us whenever we have that sort of eureka moment. But it starts off with the most basic research, the phraseology that we're not used to nowadays and things that we might not know. You know, when Mr. Edison found the Mazda lamp, I had to look up what that was.
Mazda lamp.
Things like, you're my right-hand Bauer. I'm like, is that Bauer? Is that Bauer? We spent an hour going back and forth over trying to figure out exactly what these references meant, because if I don't know what it is, the audience isn't going to know what it is, and it's just words up there. These are things that Amanda would be intimately familiar with. Amanda is a member of the DAR, the Daughters of the American Revolution, and that's very prominent to her. And past that, past just the nuts and bolts, an understanding of Southern culture and where women fit in the 1930s, where this is set, which it informs Southern women even today. Like I said, I found good role models.
The steel magnolia is now kind of a stereotype,
yes.
But it was more real than maybe than not back
Absolutely.
Then.
Absolutely. Well, and in the Depression, so many men had to go out and find work elsewhere, leaving their families behind. You know, that's where we have the WPA and all the other things where the gentlemen had to go out and find work to support their families. So single parent households weren't such an unusual occurrence during this time period. But this family had moved to St. Louis. And for Amanda, that was an upheaval, every bit of graciousness that she had grown up with. And she goes off about all vestige of gracious living gone completely. And at the end, Tom says the world is lit by lightning. And they talk about electricity. And Amanda's left back in the candlelit horse and buggy days. You know, she's a product of the past.
Now, you referred to Laurette Taylor,
yes.
Who was the person who originated this role, and it's sort of become like a show business legend. I mean, she was a big star back in the early 20s, and then she left the stage for like 20 years, and then she came back and did this play, and it was like, you know, she just exploded again and then died very quickly right after that.
Yes.
So tell me about, has Laurette Taylor informed, does it inform everything you do on the stage? Is it that powerful a performance?
To be honest with you, the stories and the research I did on Laurette Taylor, and some of this comes from a very a dear person who's very dear to the theater department, and that's Dr. David Cook. He actually knew Tennessee Williams. He would take pride in showing me Tennessee Williams' phone number that he had from the 60s and 70s. And I love that. I absolutely love it. And we were chatting not too long ago about Laurette Taylor and how in the early runs, Chicago, and they used to take shows around.
Yeah, country.
And sometimes they do that as well. But they skipped Boston because they were afraid that the show wasn't going to be a hit. So they skipped Boston altogether, apparently. Laurette had a weakness. She had the most terrible weakness in the world, which is a line that Amanda has. She just drinks too much, apparently. And so she was all over the map in the early history of the play. And in fact, when the scene opens with the family having dinner. Tom has his monologue. He introduces the play, and then it opens at the dinner table, and Amanda's telling a story. Well, it opened, Tom was doing his monologue, it opened, and Amanda was on the phone. And she was on the phone to Ella Cartwright, which is at the end of Act One. Yes. And Tom had to take that monologue back and get them back on track. So that was in the early runs, and Tennessee was, you have to get rid of this woman. They didn't know what to do, but then it opened on Broadway, and all of a sudden, everything, this is why she was a star, everything that she had been working on, everything that anybody had dreamed of for Amanda was suddenly there on stage, and it was electric. And the rest is history. Mm. So that's Laurette Taylor.
Yeah.
So, at least the parts I can tell you.
Right. Well, nonetheless, you don't want to do that to your fellow actors, though.
No. No.
Well, let's talk about the fellow actors. It's only a four-person cast, although we mentioned Mr. Wingfield is a character without ever appearing. Tell us about the other people in the cast and what do they bring to these particular roles. We haven't really talked about Laura Wingfield. Laura is, again, this also incredibly interesting, based on real life, perhaps Tennessee's older sister. She's the older sister and just sort of this fragile older sister, housebound. She gives the name of the play. She plays with these glass figurines, the glass menagerie.
It's interesting because when I reread it, I had in my head that she was considerably younger than Tom. And then in reading it, I go, oh, no, she's 2 years older. But based on the way that she's written, the character comes across as considerably younger than Tom. Tom seems like he's 30-some years old, and she seems like she's about 14. When in reality, she's 26 and he's 24. As far as the actors that are in it, Kate Rudd is playing Laura and all four of the cast members. And I'm not just saying this. I'm always a very optimistic person when it comes to theater. But I've been around this profession long enough to know that you need to have the right ingredients as far as actors go and their relationships. And not only could I not ask for a better cast, the chemistry that they have together is about as good as anything I've been around. And I've worked on like 68 plays and most of them professional in my life. So this has been a treat to be able to work on this with four actors that care so much about this and that have such a good chemistry with each other and with these particular roles that for an audience to come and see this is going to be astounding. And I don't use that word lightly.
What does she bring to the character of Laura?
Kate brings a wonderful sense of naivete to Laura. And she also has, it's funny, I've been here 2.5 years now, and the more that I get to know her, she's a wonderful vulnerability to her on stage, which is perfect for Laura. It's not too much, it's not too little, it's just the right sort of amount. Yeah. And as far as Tom goes, Chris Jett, he's a transfer student and is new this year, and I just start smiling. I can tell I smile when I think about him. One, he's a dude, and I appreciate that so much. And he has
such think of that character as being a dude.
No, and it's interesting because it's one of the things I talk to him about is that Chris is such a can be such a quiet, reserved, but very masculine guy. And one of the things I talked about is I said, that's one of the major differences between you and Tom. I love your groundedness and sort of the mysteriousness that Chris has, which is great for Tom. But Tom isn't, for instance, he's not going to cross his legs with just it kind of hanging there like this. There's like an elegance to it, the way that the leg is crossed. And I talked to Chris about that, and he's incorporated that in. So he has physically become something completely different than what he is, which Chris is very sort of blue collar, stomps when he walks. And Tom has that quality, but there's this almost graceful femininity to him. And Chris has totally embraced that.
Mm. And that masculinity is sort of the Jim O'Connor, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And Jim O'Connor is the fourth character. And we should mention, if you're not familiar, the premise of the whole play is basically Amanda has, through Tom, has tried to set up Laura with a gentleman caller.
A gentleman caller.
That's right. That's right. And Jim O'Connor is that person, and he's kind of walking into this southern madhouse, I guess. That's probably the best way of putting it. A very decent young man. And this is the other thing, is how that that role has evolved over the history of this play. It's become more important. It was sort of like a sideshow at some point. And then really there have been performances that have really fleshed out Jim O'Connor quite a bit. I assume that's what you're doing with this particular role.
It's funny because I talked with Ryan Box, who's playing that role, and I talked with him a lot. And Tennessee, you know, he has the character descriptions in the beginning. Amanda has two paragraphs. Laura has a paragraph. Tom has a paragraph. And all it says for Jim, the gentleman caller, a nice, ordinary young man, period. That's it. And we actually talked about that, and I said, it's important that he has a real masculinity to him, that he takes up space. And Ryan has evolved and is doing that beautifully at this point. But there also is something fractured about him too, because if you think about being called a nice, ordinary young man, that's about as blasé as it gets. So this is a guy that Tom has a monologue before he comes in, and he's talking about he was on this trajectory to be the next president of the United States.
He was the big man on campus.
Yes, he was. That's exactly right. And something has happened to him that has knocked him off from that pedestal. And I find it very interesting that Tennessee wrote about as blasé as you can a description of a character. And so we talked about that a lot, and that is added into the characterization. Now, he is a dude. He does take up a lot of space. He's very charming. But there's something that's just a little off, which I think feels right, in that if this guy was going to be the next president, why are you working at a job and barely getting enough money to survive on?
That's right. And yet he's still persevering. He's going to Toastmasters.
Right. He's taken a course in public speaking and radio engineering at the night school.
My guest today, Stephen Marzoff and Michelle Miller-Dill. Michelle is playing Amanda Wingfield, Stephen Marzoff directing. University of Tulsa Theater's production of Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie. It gets underway this Thursday at Kendall Hall's Chapman Theater and also continues next week as well. And they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. One of the things that's really interesting about The Glass Menagerie is it translates all around the world and has been translated. And where it's really popular is like in cultures today where the family sort of help make the match, you know, for people. And I'm wondering, that whole premise, which is really not what the play's about, the premise of, you know, the gentleman caller, it's the device to tell the story about the family. But I'm wondering if there's more resonance for a society where the family sort of helps make the match, if you will, where the gentleman caller will be the gentleman caller.
Well, you know, all I can say is my own experience. And we actually all talked about this early on as a group when we're sitting around the
parents
table.
Parents have been setting up their kids
yes.
for generations and will always
And societies, because I grew up, I'm not ashamed to say, I graduated high school in 1986. So I'm a child of the 80s. And I would go to college, and I was on scholarship, and I had internships, and, you know, I feel like I had a successful college career. And I would come back to my hometown and be out and about, and somebody would see me, oh, Michelle, how's college going? How's everything going? And I'm about to say, I just got this great internship, but the next words out of their mouths were, who are you dating? None of that mattered. It was still very much, who are you dating? And I believe Kate Rudd even said something to that effect, even today, mm-hmm. instead of, and Kate is a smart young lady, talented young lady, with lots of, she's going to be very successful out in life. And it's still, honey, who are you dating? And she's from California, so I think it's a universal thing.
Well, it sounds like it's been a great rehearsal process. Anything else we should mention about the show? I mean, you kind of mentioned the fact that it sounds like you almost have like this gray screen, the gray screen sort of thing that comes to life when Tom engages in one of his soliloquies or monologues.
There is one more thing, and this is a bond that Kate Rudd and I share. There was somebody very special in our department who were coming up on a one-year anniversary of Michael Hunt passed away from AIDS. The reason I bring that up is because what Stephen came up with and what the Department of Theater and TU has come up with very graciously is that a percentage of our ticket sales are going to be donated to the Michael Hunt Scholarship Fund. And so we want everybody to know that somebody who was so important to the department, and Kate Rudd sort of came up with this idea in conjunction with Stephen, that someone who is so important to the department wants to give back. And so if you come out and see the show, a percentage of what you spend on a ticket is going to go towards scholarships for young people here at TU.
Yeah. The Glass Menagerie opens this Thursday and runs through the weekend with a Sunday matinee. And then next week, it's a little bit of a strange schedule because we have football next Saturday, right? So there's no show Saturday.
No Saturday show.
Yeah, but when does it run next week?
It will run Thursday and Friday. We're going to take Saturday off. And then Sunday, actually, October 19th, the closing, there are three understudies that will be performing. So please come and see the show this week and then come on Sunday and see the understudies perform the show.
Well, that's what one thing I was going to ask is, you know, this only being a four-person play, are there two casts? And I assume there are, but they're going to do the last performance.
Yeah, they're going to do the last performance. Chris is going to carry over as Tom, and Adam Powell is going to play the gentleman caller, Jim. Maggie O'Gara is going to play Laura, and Caitlin Cash will be playing Amanda.
All right. Well, we hope a lot of people come out to the Glass Menagerie. It's one of the great plays, and there's a reason why it's great, and it's always good to see why at the University of Tulsa. Stephen and Michelle, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Stephen Marzoff is the director. Michelle Miller-Dill will play Amanda Wingfield in the University of Tulsa Theater's production of The Glass Menagerie, which will play this Thursday through Sunday at Kendall Hall's Chapman Theater. Additional performance dates will be Thursday, Friday, and Sunday of next week. For ticket information, visit the University of Tulsa Theater box office at 918-631-2567. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.